If you ever feel like your mind is driving you crazy, or your emotions are swallowing you whole, or that you seem to take things so personally and it keeps you from being able to be happy or be close to people in relationships, then the first thing to know is you're not alone. But the second thing to know is that the root problem might be that you don't know who you truly are. In today's episode, we are going to explore that most interesting concept, which is knowing thyself and discovering our true spiritual identity. So let's get to it.
Welcome to the Attracting Lasting Love podcast, presented by CoachingWithRoy.com. You found the place where single adults come for mindful wisdom and insight into how to attract and create healthy, lasting, conscious relationships. And now, here's your host, the owner of CoachingWithRoy.com, number one best-selling author, certified relationship coach, and TV analyst, Roy Biancalana.
Well, hello again, and welcome to another edition of the Attracting Lasting Love podcast. My name is Roy Biancalana. I am your host, and I'm excited to do part three of a five-part series that I have titled The Path of Awakening, The Path of Spiritual Awakening, Enlightenment, Realization, Waking Up, whatever phrase you want to use. And I know it's a little bit of a detour, you know, from talking about how to find a partner, because I guess in this series we're talking about how to find ourselves, right? Like, who are we? So instead of our focus being outward on relationships and healthy dynamics and attracting a partner, I want to turn it around and I want to find ourselves. I want to help us discover our true spiritual nature. I want to help us at least have a conversation about our deepest spiritual identity. Because I truly believe that the quality of our understanding of who we are directly influences the quality of every other aspect of our lives. It really does start by sort of knowing yourself. And that's an interesting phrase. I didn't know this, but I think it's in ancient Greece. There was a temple, the Temple of Apollo at Delphi, which I think is a location in Greece. Not sure. But I learned from Eckhart Tolle in his book that there is this Temple of Apollo in Delphi, and over the entrance to the temple were the words, "Know thyself." Like, that's the mission. That's the mission statement. Who am I? How do I know myself? Right? What is my true spiritual identity? And that sort of presupposes that we might not know who we are. And I want you to hold that idea as a possibility, that perhaps you and I don't know who we really are. I mean, most of us think we know who we are, but maybe not. Because all the spiritual mystics, from Buddha to Jesus to the common day ones like Eckhart Tolle, Ramana Maharshi, Michael Singer, Jim Dethmer, they would all say, no, we don't know who we are. We are living a case of mistaken identity. We have a case of spiritual amnesia. So this idea of knowing yourself is what we're talking about in this series, and especially in today's episode. So in Eckhart's book, he writes, in terms of know thyself, what those words imply is this. Before you ask any other question, first ask the most fundamental question of your life. Who am I? Right? That's the most fundamental question. And along those lines, Ken Wilber, an amazing intellectual, spiritual teacher, maybe one of the most influential in the last 50 years. In his book, No Boundary, listen to what he said. We are the victims of an epidemic case of mistaken identity. With our supreme identity quietly but surely awaiting our discovery. And the mystics want nothing more than to have us awaken to who or what we really and eternally are beneath or under or prior to our pseudo-self. See, so what he and all the mystics say is that we've got a pseudo-self. Not that we know who we are and we're faking it, but that we don't know who we are. We are presenting what turns out to be a false self, but we don't know it, which is why it's a case of mistaken identity or spiritual amnesia. And so that is what we want to talk about today. The discovery of who we truly are and how that can impact our lives. Okay? And I want to get quickly into that. Except I want to revisit something that I said last week. Now then again, in part one, I defined enlightenment, in case you're tuning in here, because you might be new to the series right now. In part one, I defined enlightenment as seeing clearly. That's all it is. It's no mumbo jumbo. It's not mystical. It's not, you know, woo-woo. It's not like you got to shave your head and wear some stupid robe and walk around saying namaste. Yeah, that's not it. It just means your eyes are opened and you see. You see clearly. Okay? And then last week, we talked about the moment your spiritual journey begins. And this is where I want to say something that I should have said last week. Because what I was pointing to is that we have this not okay feeling on the inside, this sense of really not feeling really alive. There's kind of a not okay feeling at the pit of our core being, a restlessness, a sense of being not good enough, a sense that something's missing or lacking. Okay? And I made the point that feeling is so powerful, whether you know it or not, your entire life has been about fixing that. Your whole life, everything you're pursuing and chasing, your goals, your dreams, what you're hoping for, what you want to attract, manifest, create, underneath it all, what's driving it is the belief that if I can get what I want, it will fix that not okay feeling. Okay? And what I pointed out is that it won't do it. It won't work. Most of us think we have this feeling of loneliness or disconnection at the core of who we are. And the solution is find a partner. If I find someone who loves me, then I won't feel unlovable, or I won't feel abandoned, or I won't feel like in my case, if I find a partner to really see me and appreciate me and value me, then finally I'll be seen as someone special, okay? But then you find out that life partners make lousy life sources. And every other category of life makes a lousy life source. So money makes a lousy life source. Beauty, fame, career, position, power, you name it. It makes a lousy life source. So I said last week that our spiritual journey begins the moment we see that all of our strategies for fixing the not okay feeling and feeling alive on the inside, all of our strategies have not worked and will never work. And it leaves you with that gut punch feeling, a dark night of the soul where you say, well, now what? I really am seeing clearly that my life has been about chasing those things because I thought it was going to fix the inside. And now I'm seeing They can't do it. They're not supposed to do it. But now what do I do with this not okay feeling? And so it's that moment of recognizing when all your wells are dry that your spiritual journey really begins. It's when you really begin to search for that which will fix the not okay feeling. So you'll never look for what will fix it if you still are chasing things that turn out are not able to. So your journey begins the moment you see it. It's like, oh my God, I've been wanting a partner to fix me on the inside all this time. Or I've been wanting to achieve with golf. Or I've been wanting to achieve in my career. Or get a certain amount of money. Or have a certain kind of beauty. Or a certain number of followers. Or a certain platform as an influencer. Or certain college degrees. Or certain positions of power or prestige. Status. You find out those are lousy life sources. They're not going to deliver in the ways that you have been told and you are expecting them to deliver. So it's like, oh my God, now what? That's the moment it begins. But the point I didn't stress, okay, I didn't point out, because you could almost be left with the impression that once you see that, you shouldn't pursue anything. I guess I shouldn't want a partner. I guess I shouldn't want a career. I guess I should let myself go to hell and not be pretty or handsome. I guess I should not want to get a job and make money. I guess because if everything I'm pursuing is not going to fix the not okay feeling, well, then I guess I shouldn't. Maybe I should just sit on a bench and do nothing the rest of my life. No, that's not it. What I'm saying doesn't have to change anything you're pursuing. You can still pursue a partner. You can still pursue a career. You can still have goals and dreams. You can still want to attract and manifest and create. You still do all that. But without the illusion that it's going to do something it can't do. So I want to let you know, you can still pursue a relationship. Still go online. You can still meet someone. You can still want to have a companion and have a family and be married or whatever it is that you want in your relationship life. And you can still try to climb the corporate ladder, or you still want to write a book. You can still, become an influencer. You can pursue anything you want. But in the back of your mind, you understand, okay, it's not going to do that for me though. It's just a job. It's just a partner. It's just a career. It's just money. It's just my physical appearance. None of it is going to fix the not okay feeling. None of it is going to adequately and consistently and profoundly deliver a sense of inner aliveness. I believe it was Joseph Campbell, and I should have this quote right at the tip of my tongue, but I don't. But it was, and I quoted it in one of my books. I think it was in my my newest book, Relationship Bootcamp, I think. But he said something like, he said, I'm beginning to see that we are pursuing things not for the value of the thing we're pursuing, but for the feeling of aliveness that we believe it would give us. Right? So what he's saying is, I'm noticing that whatever we're chasing, it's not that thing. It's not accomplishing the goal or finding the partner or building the company that we're really after. What we're really after is the aliveness that we believe that all of that would deliver to us. So what he's saying is, when you really understand what's really motivating you, it's wanting to feel alive on the inside, or put negatively, to fix the not okay feeling. Same thing, just talk about it from two different directions. So that was Joseph Campbell's insight. It's not the partner you want. It's what you think it would do for you on the inside. It's the feeling that you believe it would give you to have the partner. And you could substitute career or money or fame or whatever you want for partner. It's all the same. But having said that, when you recognize that, it doesn't mean you don't pursue, you know, being an influencer or writing a book or wanting a partner. Yeah, you do. But you just don't have any illusions on what it's going to do. So things get put in their proper perspective. And I would say you can become more successful at any of those things because you no longer see them as life and death. You see, when we believe that finding a partner or anything else is going to deliver the aliveness, it's going to fix the not okay feeling, like it's our hope, right? It's going to complete me. It's going to, you know, fill the void, fix the problem, you know what I mean? Finish the story. When I believe it's got that kind of power, then it's life or death. Well, then finding a partner is a fucking big deal. Because without the right partner, then I'm going to feel this emptiness. I'm going to feel this loneliness. I'm going to feel this lack. So then we try too hard, or we come on too strong, or we put too much pressure on our partners to meet those emotional needs, and therefore maybe chase them away or create tons of drama. And all of that can be transferred to any topic you're talking about. Too much pressure on your career. It's too important. This is one of the reasons why I don't think I was ever as successful in golf as I could have been. It's because it was life and death to me. My sense of self was being established by my golf performance. Who I was at stake. If I was good, then I would be special. I would be outstanding, right? My whole ego structure was supported by my performance in golf. That's a lot of pressure to put on yourself. It's not a game anymore. It's life or death. And you know, sports, you don't perform well in sports when you're holding on too tight, when you're trying too hard. You got to be free a little bit, right? You got to be relaxed in order for your body to do what you've trained it to do. But it's the same in a relationship. You put too much pressure on the partner because you're my life source. So I just wanted to point out that when you see clearly, it doesn't mean you're not engaged in the world and you're not ambitious and you don't want a partner and you don't want to grow your business. Yes, you do. But you just do it from a completely different awareness and for a completely different reason. Now you just want to give. Now you just want to have the fun of exploring and creating because it's, you know, it's just fun. It's the challenge of it, but it doesn't mean anything. Nothing really is at stake. So then golf can become a game. And maybe by being more relaxed, I could play better. And maybe a girl is not the source of my feeling special. So maybe I can relax and be more playful and not put so much pressure on her to be a certain kind of woman so that I feel special all the time. Do you see what I'm getting at? So you can still pursue all these things, and maybe you would even be more successful in everything once you recognize that nothing on the outside is going to fix something on the inside. That's my spiritual journey. That's how I deal with that. I'm not trying to put my job or my career or my looks or my fame or a partner in that hole. Now, I'm going to fill that perceived void through my spiritual path, by perhaps recognizing that there is no void to begin with, that there is no self that needs to be defined, that there is no sense of self that, you know, needs to be empowered or protected, that there is no self at all if you look very closely. But I get ahead of ourselves. So I just wanted to point that out because I thought I might have left you feeling like I guess I should just sit on a a log in the woods and just say kumbaya the rest of my life. No, that ain't it. I don't live that way. Jim Dethmer, who I'm going to interview in 2 weeks on this podcast, he doesn't live that way. He's in his early 70s. He's still working and making a difference in the world. He makes a great living, right? I think he has a new book coming out. Okay. So, but he doesn't see any of that as it's going to complete him in some way on the inside. No. Oh, heavens no. He's already complete. And from the completeness, he interacts. And you end up interacting in a much healthier way because of it. Okay? Great. All right. So today, let's talk about knowing thyself. Let's talk about discovering who we really are. Okay? Let's get at our true spiritual identity. And I want to do it in kind of a weird way. And I want you to follow with me on this. And I'm going to give you an analogy, and it's going to sound stupid. It's going to sound obvious. And you're going to think, like, why are you saying this? It's duh. It's so obvious. But I want to share with you some of the implications of this analogy I'm going to give you, because they are profound in discovering who you really are. So here's the analogy. Right now, I'm looking out my window and I can see a tree. Because I can see the tree, I'm not the tree. I'm the one looking at it. Right? There's a tree, but I'm not the tree. I'm over here looking at the tree. Can you feel that? Whether you can see a tree right now or not, maybe you have to look at some other object, your phone, a picture on the wall, whatever. Look at something and you'll see, well, there's the object. Here's the subject. There's what's seen and the seer. There's a subject-object relationship. Is there not? Now, this is true of anything that you notice. Anything that you can see or notice is not you. It's something you're noticing, right? There's some type of distance between you and it. There's some separation between subject and object. No matter what it is you're noticing, if you hear a sound, well, you're not the sound. You're not the car horn beeping. You're the one hearing it. You're not the smell of cookies in the oven. You're the one smelling it. You follow me? You're not the one, you're not the golf club. You're the one touching it. Okay, so anything that you can notice, anything, is not you. So you can't be anything that you see, hear, taste, touch, or smell. Now, that's obvious, right? You're like, what? Okay, duh, Roy, blah, right? Now, stick with me, though. What about an emotion? I know it appears to be on the inside, but isn't an emotion something you could notice, like you notice a tree? Isn't it another object? So you have emotions, but you're not the emotion. You're the one who notices it or feels it. So emotions are not who you are. They're actually no different than a tree or a house or a car. They're just another object that you see. How about thoughts? Most of us think that our identity is the thinker. But how can that be? Because you can notice a thought, right? What's a thought you might have? I'm thinking about pizza tonight. So are you the thought, or are you the one who noticed the thought about pizza? Do you see that? So you're not even your thoughts. You're the one noticing them. So a thought or an emotion is no different than a tree. It's just another thing that you're aware of. So there is this awareness in the background. It's like the awareness is sort of the space in which any object can show up. You need awareness to be aware of something, right? It needs a space for it to appear, for it to be felt or noticed. So who are you if you are not anything that you notice? What's left? See, a lot of people think they are the body, which is why we're so afraid of death. I'm the body. Well, how can you be the body? Really, what if you cut your finger off? Did you disappear? Did you change? You cut your fingernails, don't you? Do you fundamentally change? If you lost a limb in the war, did you change? I mean, sure, the function of the body changes. Are you the body, or are you the one that notices a body, or are you the one that sort of has a body? So you can't be the body, and you're not anything that you notice. You're certainly not your job. So who are you? Really? If I asked you, said, you know, so who are you? Think about how you would answer that question now that you recognize that you can't be anything you notice. You could say, well, I'm Roy. I'm Roy. Well, you can't be your name. It's a collection of letters. Besides that, your parents could have called you Rob. So how can you be your name? You're not your name. Well, who I am is a golfer. Really? Isn't that a role that you play? Isn't that a type of persona? An entrepreneur, a writer, a coach, a husband, a father. These are not who I am. These are roles that I play. Because I can't be a father. What if I couldn't have children? Do I not exist? My identity can't be a husband, because what if I never got married? Do I not exist? So I can't be any role that I play. I'm not a thought. Ramana Maharshi once said that if something is real, it has to exist in all three states of consciousness: waking, sleeping, and deep, dreamless sleep. Those are the three states of consciousness. You can be awake, like you are right now, wherever you are, or you could be dead asleep, you know, dreaming, or you can be so asleep there's not even any dreams happening. So if you exist, then you always exist, which means what's real has to exist in all three states. You say, well, of course I exist in deep dreamless sleep. How do we know that? Because you wake up and you're like, oh my God, I slept so good. I didn't even have any dreams. I was just out. How do you know? Because something was awake, even when you were sleeping. Right? You could never wake up and say, oh, I had a terrible dream. You know, I jumped off a cliff and somebody was chasing me. And I, how do you know that? You were asleep. So there must be a consciousness even when you're sleeping. Otherwise, you couldn't tell me you had a dream or that you didn't dream. So who are you? Ramana Maharshi, to help people begin to discover who they truly are, he had a process called not this, not that. In Sanskrit, it was neti, neti. Not this, not that. What he basically said is you can discover who you are by a process of elimination. Just recognize everything that you're not and then say, well, what's left? If I'm not this and I'm not that, and just keep doing it, I'm not my name, I'm not my body, I'm not my thoughts, I'm not my emotions, I'm not what I see, I'm not what I notice. So it's not this, not that, not this, not that. Keep Xing them out, cancel them out, cancel them out, cancel them out. What's left? What is the only thing that's left? Simple awareness. Consciousness. That's who you are. You are not anything you see or do. You are the space in which all that stuff appears and happens. Who you are is simple consciousness. And I'm going to get to why this is important in just a minute. So here's another analogy for you. Take a movie theater, right? Big theater, big giant white screen. Okay? The screen is a type of awareness that in or on which everything appears. Right? The screen is there. It doesn't move. It doesn't have any qualities to it. It's just a blank screen. It's just a presence. It's like awareness. It's just there. It's sort of empty. It's kind of a no-thingness. It's just a screen. And then there's all these images that appear on it. Action-adventure movies, horror movies, dramas, you name it. All this stuff appears in or on it. But the screen never changes. The screen never goes anywhere. And nothing affects the screen. It can be a really scary movie. It could be a terrible movie. It could be the best movie of all time. It could be Godfather. But nothing affects the screen. Nothing changes the screen. The screen is just an ever-present space. It's not affected by what occurs in or on it. It just reflects it. It just holds it. Another image is the sky. The big blue sky. It can have clouds or storms or all kinds of things can appear in or on the sky, but the sky is not affected. The sky is the canvas in or on which all that appears. So who you and I are is the screen. We are just pure awareness. There is no self. Because when you start talking about myself, who am I? You're going to start describing thoughts and images and memories and sensations and emotions. And all of those things are things you could notice. Anything that you define yourself as, by definition, you have to be able to notice it and point to it. That's the self. Well, then it can't be who you are, because awareness is prior to what it's aware of. The self is just another thing that you notice. It's no different than a tree. It just really isn't real. It's just another object that appears in or on awareness. So who you are is that which is aware, the space in which things happen. Now, what's the implication of this? Well, think of it this way. If you know who you are, then thoughts and feelings take on a completely different tone. There's a space that occurs between thoughts of worry, anxiety, feelings of sadness, anger, loneliness. Because you know, don't you, that certain thoughts and certain feelings appear to be so powerful that you get lost in them. They sort of overtake you. It's like, I don't feel angry. I am angry. Right? These things become our identity. So there's no space between us and our thoughts or us and our feelings. And when there's no space, we get identified with it. We sort of get lost in it. They take us over. The best phrase is we get identified with it and as it. And when it becomes our identity, it takes control of us. We no longer have control of it. But when you see yourself as the awareness of a thought or a feeling, there's a little space between you and it. Now it becomes easier to allow it, to feel it, to learn from it, to do all kinds of things with it. See, think of it this way. When I look out my window and I see the tree, well, I know I'm not the tree. So now I can do anything I want with that tree. I could go out there and climb it. I could go out there and hug it. I could go out there with a chainsaw and chop it down. I could go out there with toilet paper and teepee that thing. Or I could ignore it. Or I could admire it. Or I could just, whatever. It's a tree. Do you see? When I am not that which I'm noticing, I then have power to do whatever I want with it. But in your experience, don't you feel like sometimes an emotion has overtaken you so much that you can't resist it? You have to act it out. I have to express how I feel. Because it's like you get so identified with it, so hooked into it, that it's got you. So, you remember last time we talked about this not okay feeling, where I had this feeling of, I'm not special. I'm not seen as someone special. I want to be seen as someone who's special. Do you see that those are all thoughts? You say, I've got an abandonment wound. That's a thought. And it's got a feeling with it too. But it's not who you are. It's just a thought. It's a belief. And a belief that comes with a set of emotions, but the emotions aren't who you are either. They're just something that you see. So if my identity is I have not been seen, I'm the unseen one, I'm the unspecial one, I'm the abandoned one, I am the one who's not good enough, I am the one who is unlovable, I am unwanted. See, you end up making that be who you are, and then you're fucked because you can't get away from identity. It's who you are. So then your whole life is about compensating for it, like mine was with golf, God, and girls. But what if I was able to see that all that stuff was just a set of emotions and stories and thoughts and beliefs and memories, and that none of it is who I am? I mean, it's real in the sense that those thoughts are real and the emotions are real. But when I know that I am, like Ken Wilber said, I am prior to or before the pseudo-self, because that's what we're talking about, the pseudo-self, the unlovable one, the unwanted one. No, that's not who you are. You are that which notices all that garbage. You are the one who notices the thoughts and the feelings, but you are not the thoughts and the feelings. You're just feeling them. So there's a space that happens between you and what you thought you were. And that little space allows you to treat some of these thoughts and feelings like I would treat a tree. Okay, I could make a big deal out of it, or I could ignore it, or I could chop it down, or I could go hug the tree. I do whatever I want with the tree. So when you know that I am not these thoughts and emotions, that they're just stories that have been concocted and come with a set of emotions and memories and images, and it's not who I am. I am that which notices it. I am the screen, and the screen is unaffected by what appears on it. And so it's all these thoughts and feelings are just no longer a big deal. I'm not saying you suppress them, just the opposite. You can feel these feelings now when you know that it's just a feeling. It's just an energy moving in or on that which I am. So let it play. You're welcome here. Maybe I've learned something. But I'm not taking them that seriously because it's not who I am. They're temporary appearances. That's another reason why you know something is not who you are, because you are always permanent, right? You're always there. Aren't you kind of the same person you were when you were 10? I know you've learned and you've grown, but that awareness is not different than what it was when you were 10 years old. So there's a perennial sense of beingness that you've experienced in your entire life. There's a permanence of your presence. So in order for something to be who you are, it has to be permanent. What emotion is permanent? Do you always feel anxious every minute of every day? Are you always having thoughts that you're unlovable? You never get distracted. You're watching a movie, you're laughing, and in that moment, you're not thinking you're unlovable. So then how can you be any of that stuff if there's sometimes where it's not there? Because you are always there. So the only thing that can be real is that which is always there. And so you are no thingness. You are emptiness. That's what the Buddhists call it, emptiness. Why? Because the screen is empty. The screen is no thing. There's no qualities to it. If there's anything that you could point to and say, that's me, by definition, it can't be it. You are the one pointing at it. You are the one seeing it. So if you can see it, it's just another object. So everything you see is not you. So the only thing you are is that which you can't see. It's the seer itself. It's the awareness or presence. And the more you recognize that, one, you can maintain emotional equilibrium, you know, 1,000 times better. Because it's not I am angry, I have angry feelings. Therefore, I can do anything I want with these. I can express them, I could ignore them, I could breathe with them, I could let them go, I could laugh at them, I can do anything I want. And all those neurotic thoughts that keep you up at night, all those thoughts about, well, what are people thinking of me? All those thoughts are just thoughts. They're not real. They're not who you are. You can do anything you want with them. You can believe your thoughts, as most of us do, because we're so identified with our thinking. We think, if there's anything that we really do think is who I am, is I'm the thinker. It appears that we are behind our eyes in the center of our head. That's me. I'm the thinker. But it can't be true because you can spot thought. So what's seeing it? Awareness is seeing the thought. And you don't always have thoughts. You're not always thinking. In deep dreamless sleep, you're not thinking, but you still are there. So you can't be the thinker. You just have thoughts. So when you have a different relationship to your thoughts once you recognize this. Because before, you have to believe them. They're true. I am this. I am right. I am whatever, because I'm thinking it, it's who I am. No, not at all. Your thoughts are just like the tree. You can do anything you want with the thoughts. You could question them. You could ignore them. You could laugh at them. You could believe them. You could act on them. But you have power over them because they are not who you are. And you have power over your emotions because you know they are not who I am. They're just occurring in or on that which I am. They're just energies. They're just images on the screen. But I'm the screen. So the first benefit of knowing who you are is that you get freed from the tyranny of thinking and the emotional distress that we all experience. But the second thing, maybe the most important, is you don't take anything personal. Because it's not about me, because there is no me. Nothing is taken personal. Even your emotions are not personal. When you recognize who you are, you begin to discover you don't even choose your thoughts or your emotions. They're not your thoughts. The screen can't say, that's my movie. It's just what's appearing on it. The screen doesn't own anything. It just reflects it. And your thoughts and emotions, they just come up. They're not yours. They're not personal. They don't mean anything about you. They're just energies and thought forms that, like if you've ever meditated for more than 3 minutes, you know that you don't control your thoughts. I mean, do it as an experiment. Try to sit down for 30 seconds and not think and watch how impossible that is. You're actually trying not to think. If you had control of your thoughts, then you should be able to stop thinking for 30 seconds, and you won't be able to. You'll be sitting there saying, okay, did I think? I'm not thinking right now. But that's a thought. Telling yourself, oh, yeah, I'm not thinking right now. Yes, my mind is empty. Those are all thoughts. But you're trying not to, which proves that you don't choose your thoughts. You don't choose your emotions. They come up. So they're not yours. And nothing's personal. You don't have to take anything personal. It's like the movie screen can't get upset when it's a sad movie. It wouldn't make any sense. Go to a movie screen anonymous meeting. They're all sitting around, oh my God, you know, I had all sad movies this week on my screen. Or I had all, you know, oh, it was awful week. I had these terrible porno movies on my screen. Or, you know, oh, it was a great week, man. I had action adventure movies. It was romantic comedies. That would be, right? That's ludicrous. The screen is not what appears on it. It's not personal. And nothing in your life is personal either. It's just what's occurring. And you can welcome it, and you can work with it, and you can learn from it, and you can breathe with it. You can let it go. You just appear on my screen and disappear. That's what movie screens do. They just reflect what's there, and then when there's nothing there, it's just let it go. So this gets us going in the direction of discovering who we really are by doing it the way of Ramana Maharshi. Not this, not that. I'm not my body. I'm not my emotions. I'm not anything I notice or see or touch or taste or smell. If I'm not all of that, what am I? What's left? Because I know that I am, right? That's the undeniable reality. I am. Right? I'm here. Remember last week I said, if I said, you know, hello, are you in there? You're like, yep, I'm here. Right? I am. But anything after I am is not who you are. It may be something you're thinking or feeling or a role you're playing or something you're doing, but it's not who you are. I am that I am is who I am. So nothing's personal. And emotions can be felt and come and go, and thoughts can be listened to or not, laughed at or not. Does this make sense? I know it's the implications of this are yours to explore. I would suggest that you read books like The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle or Michael Singer's book, The Untethered Soul. These are resources that speak of these things. Okay? But the discovery of who you are is by noticing what you're not, what you can't be, because it's all temporary. It comes and goes. Everything's impermanent. You're not anything you could see. You're not anything you notice. You're the one noticing. So the more that you really understand the subject-object relationship, what you're developing is witness consciousness. That's what this is called. It's still a duality. There's still two things. There's you and what you're seeing. There's the witness and what's witnessed. There's the observer and what's observed. There's the person seeing and what's seen. Now, there is a dimension in the spiritual path where those actually are not two, where they actually become one. It's oneness. It's called non-duality. That's pretty far in the deep end of the pool. I don't know if I'm qualified to talk extensively about that, but last week we started our spiritual journey by saying that we find the trailhead, when we discover all of our other attempts at fixing the not okay feeling don't work. And that's what starts it. What does? And what does work is recognizing who you are and who you aren't. Because all those not okay feelings, they only come from a mistaken spiritual identity. They only come from a pseudo self. I'm the abandoned one. I'm not good enough. I've not been seen. I need to feel special. That's all the ego. That's all the small self. And it's not real. It's not who you are. So we disentangle all of those wounds and thoughts and emotions and memories by just seeing them for what they are. They are energies that are moving in or on that which I am. They are not me. See, the screen is whole and complete unto itself. The screen is not lacking anything. The screen isn't missing something. The screen doesn't need anything to complete it. It's already there. The sky doesn't need anything to complete it. It's not lacking. Things just appear in it or don't. But the sky is complete and whole. And you, as awareness, this is not a belief. This is what you can experience for yourself. That's an important point. I'm not asking you to believe this. I'm asking you, do you see the tree? If so, are you the tree or are you the one looking at it? And then follow that principle throughout anything else that you notice. And everything you notice is fine, but it's not who you are. Who are you? I'm the noticer. What does that mean? Well, that means that anything that's happening is just not a big deal. And the noticer is already complete. It isn't missing anything. It doesn't need anything. It's like the screen. It's just emptiness, or as the Hindus call it, believe it or not, they call it fullness. People sometimes think that the yogic tradition disagrees with the Buddhist tradition. No, one calls it empty, the other one calls it full. They both mean the same thing. There's a completeness. But the Buddhists are more negative. It's about what's not there. It's just empty. And the yogic tradition is about the fullness of it. It's like it's complete unto itself. So you are complete. You don't need a partner to complete you. There is nothing lacking. You don't need money to feel valuable. Awareness is beauty. You don't need to try to make something beautiful so that you feel or get noticed. I'm not saying this will make complete sense to you, but I'm hoping at least it's becoming intriguing. I'm hoping at least you kind of want to go down the trail a little farther. Like, I want to keep exploring the spiritual journey. I found the trailhead, and now the first waypoint on the trailhead is this discovery of witness consciousness. And what does that mean? What does it mean if I'm not anything that I see? What does it mean if I say, I am? That's the only thing that's real, that's permanent, that doesn't change. I am. So this is one of the first things that you see on your spiritual journey, is you disidentify from that which you aren't. You get clear, right? Know thyself, right? Apollo at Delphi, know thyself. What do I know? I am not this and I'm not that. I am this open space of awareness. I am the screen in or on which everything appears. I am. That's who I am. And now the rest of the journey is exploring, okay, what does that mean for my relationships? What does that mean for my daily life? How do I live from this awareness that I am simply the open space of awareness that is never born and never dies? I am. By the way, the fear of death disappears because consciousness doesn't die. The Buddhists have a saying. They ask you to discover who you are before your parents were born. What that's pointing to is this timeless consciousness, because there's no person to it. There's no identifiable, I was born, I was dead, I die. It's not personal. It's a space. It's a consciousness. And so they say, who are you before your parents were born? Who will you be 100 years after you die? Okay? So I know these are head scratchers. These make your head spin. These are bizarre thoughts. But I'm inviting you to possibly get interested in what I'm saying. And I can tell you, in case you're wondering, any decent spiritual teacher at any point in the history of humanity is teaching exactly what I said, because that's where I got it from. My own experience, my own exploration, because it's not a belief. This is something you can directly experience. You can do it yourself. Am I this? Am I not? Not this, not that. Not this, not that. And you'll be left with this process of elimination, which the only thing that is here is that which is noticing. That's all you'll ever find. And so exploring what that means is what the rest of this series is about, and I'm hoping it becomes a real passion of your life. All right, so next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the map of spiritual progress. I'm going to talk about four ways of being, four states of consciousness, you can say. I'm going to lay out a little bit of a pathway so that you come away with a clear idea of, what's my next step? What do I need to focus on to have these realizations, you know, that I am whole and complete, and that there really is not an okay, not okay feeling. It's not there. It's just a thought. It's just a feeling, but it's not real. I often joke with my clients who think that they have this, you know, abandoned thing, or they're like me, don't feel special or seen. Well, let's take an MRI. Where is that? Can you show me where the not okay feeling is? Right? Is it labeled the one of your ribs? No, it's, you won't find it in an X-ray or an MRI because it's not there. It's a thought. It's just a silly thought that comes and goes. It's not who you are. It's just, it's silly, not okay feeling. All I have is that, like, an empty sensation in my stomach. It doesn't mean I'm abandoned. It doesn't mean I'm lonely. It's just a sensation in my stomach. It doesn't mean anything about me. I can just let it go. I can feel it, breathe with it, whatever, but there's no big story to it. It doesn't mean, oh my God, I'm abandoned. Oh, I'm lonely. No, you're just having sensations in and around the body. But next week we talk, I want to get very specific and show you where you can be sort of on your journey and what you should focus on next to keep your progress going on the path of awakening. And until next week, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Attracting Lasting Love with Roy Biancalana. Be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss a single episode. And while you're at it, please leave a rating and review and share it with anyone you think might benefit from listening. Check out our website at coachingwithroy.com and tune in every week for more insights and wisdom on creating healthy, lasting, conscious relationships.